Grade 1 Conference, Lecture 7, The Four Temperaments, Part 3. Another way of describing the etheric body's connection with the elements is to use the terminology that we got in the first few lectures, the fourfold human being. So we could say again, the etheric body penetrating and working with the physical body results in the melancholic temperament. The etheric body working with the etheric body, working with itself, results in the phlegmatic temperament. The etheric body working with the astral body, which sometimes means working against the astral body. This gives us the sanguine temperament. And finally, the etheric body working with fire means the etheric body working with the ego. This gives us the choleric temperament. But as I said early on, and could never stress sufficiently enough, very little of a child's ego is within them. That ego is beyond the world of the zodiac. It needs another 14 years to make even the most hesitant homeopathic connection with the human being. We're never talking about more than a few percentage points of penetration. So yes, that choleric has something of the quality of individuality a lot sooner than many of his classmates. He has the quality of leadership, and as I said, a quality also of boldness, of tremendous facility with the physical body. But this is all very much from outside. And this is not an easy thing to carry. All of these capacities, all of this this being of oneself, the deepest part, the highest part of oneself, but it's rarely very much within. So we see now the fourfoldness of the temperaments is the reflection of the fourfold human being in the etheric body. And we can imagine, of course, then what we're going to see in adolescence, particularly in the high school years, will also be a reflection of the fourfold human being, but as it manifests then in the astral body. But again, that's not our concern right now. So let's look a bit at these temperaments from a purely physical point of view. What do they look like? And I'm not just being sort of materialistic here, but this may be one of the most helpful things I have to bring, because I'm told again and again by first grade teachers, even teachers in later grades, I don't know the temperaments of my children. I can't tell by looking at them. No, he looks phlegmatic, but he has a very choleric side, or, you know, she's so sanguine in so many ways, but she, you know, she still kind of has the phlegmatic quality in one way or another. So how can just looking at a child help us here? Well, the way a child looks, you know, their morphology, their shape, their appearance, a good deal of this, especially in the child's life, is connected, as I said earlier, to the model body and also to the activity of the etheric body. So when we look at the child, we are seeing a good picture, by and large, in many respects, of what the etheric body intends for that child to be temperamentally. So the physical body, the appearance of the child, should be our first point of departure for understanding a child's temperament. More than their actions, more than their behavior. Because the children's actions and their behavior are also very much affected by their environment and by the behavior and actions of children around them, by the behavior and actions of you, their teacher, of their parents. A lot of this, the side of children's behavior and children's actions has more to do really with their astral body, which is very important. But we are, above all, we're working pedagogically and therapeutically pedagogically with our first graders. We want to be looking at the work of the etheric body above all, and that's going to be manifesting through the physical. So with these four descriptions I'm going to give you, which are very schematic, and I said more like templates than anything totally filled out, this should help you take a very big step towards understanding the child's temperament. It's not correct 100% of the time, but it's a lot more dependable than just taking your cues from how they behave or things that they seem to be saying about their inner feelings or something like that. Those have their importance as well, but what I give you now is the most important of all. So the melancholic, thin, often frail looking, often not looking that well, and indeed often not being that well. Let's say if you have six melancholics in the class, probably four of them will be near the top of the list of absentees in grade one, grade two, and grade three. The primary school years are a big hump for them, very big challenge to kind of find their way into earthly life and to start, you know, bringing some flesh and blood around those bones. How do they dress? Melancholics generally have a proclivity towards darker colors. That used to be a dead giveaway until the malls started to stock nothing but dark colors for children to wear. So everybody wears purple and black now at pretty much every age. But nonetheless, they will like darker colors, and they also like clothing that is kind of tailored. It seems strange to talk about a first grader wearing tailored clothes, but a kind of svelte look, something that is close to the body's contours. Why? Because they experience their body as, you know, the bones. They want whatever cuts close to the bone feels most comfortable for them. So they don't like to wear lots of layers necessarily or, you know, heavy clothes. In fact, if anything, they'll often be, underdressed, which doesn't help them with colds and things like that in the winter. So you want to be sure that you are helping them with their warmth, even as you realize they need a sense of their clothing being a thin, dark layer around them. So look for these things, and most of the time, you will find a melancholic child shining out of all of that. The phlegmatic child, quite opposite. As opposite as water can be from earth, though water, of course, can become earth-like when it freezes. The phlegmatic child is one who is round, holds on to her baby fat for a long time, sometimes, you know, right up to puberty and adolescence, who has a kind of moon face very often and has an altogether healthy, even robust look. And in fact, again, this physical look is not belied by the reality, because phlegmatics are children who tend to be most present most of the time. It takes a lot for a phlegmatic child to be absent. And it's possible that you have a phlegmatic who doesn't miss a single day of school for years at a time. That's how healthy and hearty they can be. Also, they're Their behavior, as is very well known, is usually going to be, you know, slower movement and a little bit sluggish, kind of dreamy in consciousness, and other things like that. We'll go into that in the next lecture when we look at, you know, behavior and how to work with that. They also tend to like comfortable and fairly loose clothing. So you see that the etheric body, which is our body of form and structure, sort of the form and structure tend to dissolve in the watery quality of the phlegmatic child. So form does not come that readily to them. Habit does, but not external form. So their clothing will often be kind of formless. I'm sure phlegmatics had a lot to do with that other great mall phenomena of everything being a sweatshirt and sweatpants and, you know, comfortable, loose-fitting clothing that sometimes is practically pajama-like in quality. And the phlegmatic child tends to like to wear the same clothes again and again and again. And this can sometimes be a hygiene issue, especially for other children. Whereas melancholics favor black, deep blue, deep purple, the phlegmatic's favorite color is green. All shades of green, shades of gray also, especially if they're colorblind, gray, green, a little bit of light brown perhaps, but sort of earthly colors, but colors, you know, going towards growth. And once again, they have a few favorite outfits, and that's about it. So when you see that, look for the phlegmatic child. The sanguine child, here again, like the melancholic, a tendency to be thin, not always, but usually thin, a tendency to be tall, as though they're just reaching up into the airy element. In fact, they stretch so much towards the airy element that they tend to walk on tiptoes. When you see children, you know, running around on their tiptoes, that's a giveaway of a very strong sanguine streak, if not necessarily a complete sanguine temperament. And the sanguine child is usually very comely to look at, as the poem says, fair of face. They're usually very attractive children, and this can create difficulties when it comes to disciplining them or being justifiably annoyed with a sanguine. It's hard to do. The sanguine child likes to dress. Yes, they like to dress. They like to wear really nice clothing. They don't like to wear the same thing twice, if possible, even in the entire school year, much to their parents' dismay when it comes to weekly trips to clothing stores. They like to be in fashion. They like designer clothes. They are very aware of what everybody else in the class is wearing, and they will sort of be the fashionistas of the class and set the tone for what's really in style and what isn't. It may just have been coincidence, but many of the sanguines that I had in my years of teaching were the younger sisters of somebody else, someone who's usually a teenager. It's funny. So they have a model there of someone who naturally is getting more engaged in the astral world, and the sanguines see this, and even at their young age, this quality of astrality starts to come there. So that's the look of the sanguine. The taller, attractive, and very, very concerned about clothes and patterns, and often liking a variety of patterns, lots of little things like polka dots or little birds on a shirt or on a dress. That's often their delight as well. The choleric, look first at the legs. Most children in first and second grade have, you know, very skinny legs. They're not yet penetrating their limbs very much. The choleric's legs are already quite developed, look very sturdy, and indeed carry that child in running and jumping and all sorts of will activities on the earth. So that's one quality. There usually is a sturdiness, almost a quality of muscularity, though that really doesn't come about in the child until puberty. But you see in the choleric that the physical body's already sort of acting out of its own laws and rules. Often cholerics are on the shorter side, but I've seen my share of, you know, medium to tall cholerics as well. But there is a quality of compactness, that something there is, you know, well-knitted, tightly put together to move with tremendous efficiency in earthly space. And also a kind of hale and hearty look for the most part. You know, especially when they've been physically active, they come back and they're sweating, heated up, red cheeks, so that the warmth forces work very powerfully. They rarely, if ever, will complain about being cold. They're always complaining it's too hot. And do I have to wear that hat? Do I have to wear that coat? They just want to throw it all off and just let their own warmth stream out into the world. But they need to conserve that warmth. So you want to help them to hold on to the warmth, because that helps the ego forces come in instead of just constantly streaming outside of themselves. What do cholerics like to wear? What they like to wear is whatever is different from what everybody else is wearing. Cholerics dream up the weirdest clothing combinations and things. You know, they often don't even know what they're wearing. Well, why did you wear that shirt? What shirt? Oh, that shirt. I don't know. You know. But the funny thing is, on them, it looks good. Whatever they wear, you know, polka dots and stripes, or, you know, a green shirt and blue pants or something, on them it looks perfectly fine. How could you imagine wearing anything else? And again, it's this quality of individuality coming from outside, external individuality in the way they dress. But it's always fun to see what they show up with on any given day. So there you have something of the four morphologies. And in the next lecture, we'll look at some of the behavior qualities. As I say, these are where we can get a little bit confused. We'll look at this. And then we'll also go on to look at meeting these four temperaments, giving a kind of pedagogical outline. Once we take up the specific subjects, like teaching reading or drawing or painting or anything like that, then we'll also look specifically at the effect of these subjects or artistic modalities on the four members of the human being and on the four temperaments in the class.